Hello, welcome to Base Camp for Men. I'm your host, Tony Rizak. This is the show that gives you insights and resources on how to live a more courageous life. We'll be looking at men, the current state of masculinity, and how to create a more inspiring narrative for all men. Welcome, and let's get started. Hello, Base Campers. I hope you're all doing well. The topic of geoengineering or weather modification has been circling around us for quite some time now. And it used to be that you couldn't even mention it without being called a conspiracy theorist or crazy person. It was just one more topic meant for you to avoid lest you be ostracized, according to the globalist media. Have you noticed a pattern? All of the things that we the people go out to the edge of the forest to better understand is deemed off limits. It is almost as if there is a deception going on. Gasp, oh my God. The message on all of this is clear. Stay in your lane, citizen. Don't seek the truth as it will make everyone uncomfortable. Like so many people, I've seen abundant evidence of geoengineering with my own two eyes, and I've seen it on countless occasions in many, many locations. What are these private companies and governmental entities doing up there? Why are they doing it? And who gave them the authority to spray our skies and impact us so directly? That's my question. It's called many things: geoengineering, weather modification, solar radiation management, stratospheric aerosol injection, and marine cloud brightening. These are the terms that these companies use, not our terms. Whatever the name, this aerosol bombardment has life-threatening impact on all biological life, including humans. They are spraying without the knowledge and consent of citizens worldwide. I will say that as clear as I can. They are spraying without our consent. You do not have our consent to spray us with chemicals from our skies. To sustain life on the planet as we know it, this constant toxic bombardment from the sky must come to an end. And come to an end it shall. So it is, and so it shall be. Let's go talk to our guest today, who is helping to point the way to a better, brighter future with cleaner air. Enjoy, Base Campers. My guest today is Renette Senham. Renette is a former two-time mayor of Nevada City, California, and California gubernatorial candidate. She is a dedicated solutionarian who founded Save Our Skies, an organization dedicated to a cleaner planet by mounting a landmark legal challenge to ending this aerosol madness. Here is my interview with Renette Senham. All right, I am here with Renette Senham, former mayor of Nevada City, founder of Save Our Skies, and just overall badass. I could call you a badass. Renette Senham. Renette, welcome to Base Camp for Men. It is great to have you on the show.
Thank you.
Is that the first time anybody's introduced you as a badass or no?
Badass, yes, that might be the first.
Okay.
I've been called other things, sure.
Why don't you give us a little bit of a background? I mentioned that you're a former mayor. Just give us a little bit about, what you've been doing the last 10 or 15 years and your background before we get into the topic today.
Sure. So I'm from Nevada City, California, and this county, Nevada County, in the Sierra foothills, old gold mining town, Victorian Homes and Shops, is my hometown's home area since I was four. Mm-hmm. And about 20 years ago, I became concerned with the state of the planet, which kind of looks like the good old days to me. Mm-hmm. And I started really working on peak oil at the time, what I thought was to be peak oil, sustainability, resiliency. And I do mean the mom and pop version, not the United Nations version.
Yep.
It was really about, I don't care what your feelings are about oil, whether you like it or don't like it. It's a high risk for us. It's a national security risk in that whether peak oil is man-made or not, or it's being manipulated, if it's ever cut off, we're screwed. Mm-hmm. And so my whole objective is to really create a very strong local economy, local food network, time banking, even, car shares, cow shares, you name it. And sure. Then I ran for city council in 2008 in Nevada City, became a vice mayor and mayor. I spent 4 years in the council, was done, I thought, still highly engaged, especially on the homeless and doing a warming shelter and trying to deal with that issue. And then I ran again in 2016, got elected, became vice mayor and mayor again. And then when COVID hit in 2020, I was mayor. And ultimately, I just won my third term for city council. And being that I was behind the scenes on Zoom calls and so on, and with county officials and public health directors and so on, I began to see some real big red flags until ultimately I was one of the few elected officials to call Al Newsom when he did a statewide mask mandate and all hell broke out. But I was seeing what was going on, and I could see that the only way our leaders believed that we were going to get our way out of this was through a vaccination, mandatory vaccination. So I resigned in July of 2020. And when I resigned, instead of taking the oath for my third time, I called out my city council members and all my elected officials around me. And I said, you're all committing crimes against humanity. And the information that is available to me is available to you. And essentially, you're ignoring it. So I said, we're going to come back in due time, and we're going to hold your feet to the fire to the highest extent of the law. And I said goodbye and ran for governor in California. No party affiliation, highly censored in an amazing way. But I still traveled 20,000 miles, met the tens of thousands of people, and did that in about 6 months. And now I'm taking the people that I met, the networks, the influencers, the people who I know what skill sets they have, and we're launching into fighting against geoengineering.
Great. That's great. What was the temperature like in Nevada City in terms of people that were quick to comply and those that were more in your camp? Because I'm in Seattle. It's extremely woke here. There's some outlying areas where you're going to get maybe more people that think about freedom and the Constitution and you know, more critical thinkers. I don't want to put down the left. What was it like there? Was it more of a mixed bag, or because you're in California, it was just really, really blue and everybody was like, hey, Renette, come on, come to your senses. Right. You know, we all have to comply to get through this, which was the sentiment here.
Right. Well, it depends upon where you are. Like Nevada City itself, tiny little town, 3,100. We have the largest environmental film festival in the world, lots of nonprofits, environmental nonprofits. And so Nevada City itself is very, very left-leaning. The rest of the county is more mixed. But what happened was, and I saw it firsthand, was this town is a town full of activists. We get engaged. We're lit as far as like we go out there and we do things, we make changes, we fight against things. And so I was shocked when, as mayor, I was getting cries for help of people saying, look, with his mask mandate, I have heart issues, I have asthma, I've been raped. You know, if you put something over my mouth, I go into PTSD. And I was shocked by how people in this community, specifically in Nevada City, responded with like, well, tough luck, you got to do it. And if you don't do it, you don't care. And so I'm like, look, it, no individual has a unilateral power to require every California citizen to wear a medical device on their face. That just can't do that.
Yep.
And I'm getting the cries for help. And you can't ignore them, even if it's just a few, which is more than a few. You can't ignore these cries for help. And so what was interesting is I saw the psychology with the people who I was very, very close to, dear friends, I worked with them on the front lines. They saw that as a betrayal. Like, how could you, Renette, of all people, not wear a mask? How could you not care about grandma? I'm like, well, first of all, I do care about grandma. That's why I'm willing to lose my friendships, is to save your lives and those of your grandmothers. Yep. And I'm just telling you, a mask is not working. You don't have to wear it. Nobody can force you. If you want to take care of yourself and fight COVID, go outside, grow some food, take vitamin D, zinc, and so on. Yeah. You know, get your vitamin D with the sun, get your hands in the soil, get some fresh air, walk in the forest. Don't go into fear and don't, and also anxiety. And it was that if you care, you wear a mask, is when I did not conform and wear a mask, that to this day, this community thinks that I betrayed them. And I'm saying,
Yep. Boy, our stories are very similar.
They're all similar. Thousands of people who have similar stories.
I lost so many friends during this, you know, it's sad, but also it's like, okay, you know, sometimes your truth and your principles and values are higher than friendships that you've had for 10, 15, 20 years, if those are no longer in alignment. It was, you know, COVID was a really big test of people's principles and values. You know, it was easy to say, oh, we have all these different things in common. And then when it was really time, when it really hit and the globalists were trying to ratchet down control, then you saw which side people really were on, right?
Right. It was a litmus test. And I've had that pass as a community activist. I've done projects, like public projects, where I've been shocked how people respond. Some of them are like spiritual people or the yoga people or conservative, but they want the streets to be cleaned up, you know, and they respond to, like, for instance, I put a parklet out in 2011. It was a second parklet in the state of California, after one that was installed in Nevada City. Of course, parklets popped up everywhere when restaurants were forced to dine outside, right? They had little you know, little areas where they took up the parking. They have, so we did this, and the people's response to it was shocking. And I was like, wow, this little parklet is actually a litmus test. Mm-hmm. I'm actually able to glance into people's souls and see their darkness, to see their fears, to see what they really think. And COVID did the same damn thing.
It did.
And boy, it was harrowing. It was shocking. It was depressing and enlightening in the same time. And as you said, I lost friends of like 40 years, like my old high school teachers, you know, that yep. I was in their will, for God's sake, right? They're like a family. Mm-hmm. And they were like, shut up, Renette. And, you know, and just, it was like, wow, I'm sorry I was so wrong. I thought I knew everybody. And not that they're bad people, but the fear got the best of them. And the fear, maybe it's our unwillingness to look at our mortality, right? Or we don't believe in God or the afterlife. I don't know. Mm-hmm. But people were so afraid of death that they were willing to throw anybody and everybody, even to this day, under the bus who did not align with them. So you can have every color skin you want and dyed colored hair and piercings and tattoos, be as different as you want, but you have to think the same.
Right. Exactly.
And
exactly.
I'm like, no, I actually think that you can think differently too.
Yeah. Yeah. And so let's talk about, you know, even the name bioengineering, like I've heard it first, it was chemtrails, but then that just got smeared as a conspiracy. There's, you know, only people that are conspiracy theories believe in chemtrails. And then I've seen cloud seeding, weather modification, geoengineering, I guess, is the most neutral term. So would you agree, like all the names, it's kind of all talking about the same kind of thing, right? Or are those distinct?
Well, I mean, there's geoengineering, there's stratospheric aerosol injections, right? There's chem clouds. There's all these different things, right? There's you know, silver iodide. There's many different types and techniques of modifying the weather, which is highly, highly documented from over 100 years now. It has a lot of different names, terminologies, methodologies, and reasons behind it. And we can get into that.
Okay. So when did you first start noticing something in the skies that maybe didn't seem quite right?
That would have to have been, I would say, probably around 2005, 2006 for me. Some people I know were earlier. I started seeing these, you know, planes going straight up with these weird tails, you know, the trails behind them. I thought, well, is that a rocket? What is that? Mm-hmm. And as I said, I was raised here since I was a child, and yet I'd never seen anything quite like that. And then I saw more and more and more, and they would last longer and longer. As a child, I used to sail in my little guppy D on a little lake that we lived on. And I spent my whole childhood looking and watching the skies. I'm like, I've never seen that before. I've traveled around the world many times, never seen that before. And so then it became more and more and more prevalent. Like every, you know, people are like, well, it's because there's more airlines. And I'm like, well, there are more airlines for sure, but you would still see a percentile, right? A percentage of those trails would still persist, even if there's only 50,000 planes flying or a million planes, you know, you'd see it.
Yeah, yeah.
And didn't. And so I'm like, no. And I would say to people, so maybe it is just the jet fuel, the condensation, but why are we seeing it? What's in it? Has there been an environmental impact study done? So I wasn't necessarily saying it was some top secret, you know, underground nefarious program. I'm just like, why are we seeing it? What has changed? And has this actually been studied and proven safe?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Couldn't even go there.
Right. Right. Well, I started noticing probably about the same. I mean, I remember as a kid watching planes go overhead with the contrails, the condensation, and that would dissipate, right? You know, it might be a kind of a longer one, but eventually, you know, you would watch it. And one of the things as a kid is you watch it, you know, because you're really curious. You're like, oh, look, it dissipates. In the last, say, 15 years, one place where it's really dramatic, we have a condo over in the central part of the state. So it's kind of big sky country over there. You know, there's not big cities over there. And you can sit and watch. We were just over there just a few weeks ago, and you can watch like two airplanes spraying something. Like it's clearly in some sort of aerosol spray that is staying in place. And then they go to the horizon, and then you can see them turn and you can see them come back around, and two of them kind of running parallel, and they just keep sweeping back and forth to create this kind of mesh. And then over time, like over 2 or 3 hours, it dissipates, but it makes the formerly blue sky, almost cloudless day over there. All of a sudden there'll be this haze. You can't really see the sun. It's just like this kind of, you know, and you see that a few dozen times happen and you're like, wait a minute, what is going on? And, you know, I guess one of the things I wanted to ask you is kind of like, who's doing it? Like that's the one thing. It's like, it's such a gaslit subject matter that it's kind of like, who's doing it? Why are they doing it? Like, what's the end means, or the goals of whatever it is they're doing? Do you have a sense of that? Or do you have a, you know, kind of an educated guess, or what has your research taught you about it?
Well, you know, first of all, I just have to say that it's a multitude of different things depending mm-hmm. upon the players. So we have everything from the DOD, you know, the U.S. government. You have power companies like, for us, Pacific Gas and Electric. You have universities, research organizations, corporations, mm-hmm. NATO. There's a myriad of different reasons why they do this. For instance, power companies are known for doing what's called cloud or water snow augmentation, and they have to report on that yearly. So they actually have to apply. They apply to the Department of Commerce, as well as NOAA, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. And they apply, and then they're like, oh, we're going to be doing this cloud seeing for this long, and these are the ranges, this is the map. And that is so that, you know, they can make more hydroelectricity, but it can also be used as a weapon of war. Mm-hmm. In fact, it was during the Vietnam War when the U.S. military was actually using weather manipulation to extend the monsoon season over the Ho Chi Minh Trail. And by doing this, they're trying to dry, you know, to drown out their supply routes. Mm-hmm. And after that, there's something called the NMOD. It was an international agreement, a global agreement saying, okay, you can no longer use weather modification during a time of war. No mention during a time of peace.
Mm.
So it's very easy. It's actually really easy to alter the weather. And shockingly, if you go onto weathermodificationhistory.com, it's Jim Lee's website. Mm. Weathermodificationhistory.com has an extensive and really beautifully done website on the last over 100 years. It started in the 1800s. And then by the, you know, 1940s. And so we had ranchers and we had, you know, farmers who had little, you know, canisters of silver iodide, and they were told, okay, shoot it up this, you know, day, or they wanted to make more rain, or the government say, hey, we want you to do this, go and shoot your canister. So they're doing that back then too. So then in California, in many states, it's legal to do what's called a public health policy spraying. So they can have a public health spraying, and it could be an mRNA vaccination today if you wanted it to be. There's no oversight on this. And so they can spray with whatever they want to. It's kind of crazy, but as long as you're doing for research, you can do whatever you want.
It's shocking to me that they have the authority to just spray us without any kind of that's just stunning to me that they, I mean, is it because using legalese, they can say, hey, air jurisdiction is not land jurisdiction? Like, what are they skirting it? Because to me, it's like, if they're spraying anything above us, that would seem like that would get some sort of due process in some kind of court.
Well, it shouldn't, it will. I mean, that's why we've launched our saveourskies.org, is because, you know, we're launching, and it's a complicated matter, to say the least. And it's not a question of like, who are the perpetrators and what are they doing? It's like, oh, trust me, we know who many of them are, and we know why many of them are doing what they're doing. Now, the question is, which we have been doing for the last almost 3 months now, is we've been looking at the different perpetrators, seeing who's committing what crime. And of course, we do realize it's highly, highly complicated, and we'll get into this as much as we can. But we also realize that it's not about going out there and battling science against science. It's mm-hmm. like, what we're doing is we're looking for the biggest perpetrators out there that we can go after with the smallest little linchpin, right? How we can identify the smallest gear in a whole machinery of gears and take it out. So it's not about going head on and head, you know, with the science, like, you know, this is what you're doing. And they're saying, no, we're not, we're doing this. And forget about it. That's a he said, she said, very expensive lawsuit.
Yeah.
What we're trying to do is actually find the little tiny linchpin. Like, for instance, think of the mafia, how we took the mafioso out with, you you know, tax evasion. You didn't get them because they're being the mafia. You got them for tax evasion. You went in sideways. So what we've done is we've actually looked at a variety of different perpetrators. We've looked at case law. We've looked at, you know, court precedents. We've looked at current laws and how they've just recently changed. We can get into NEPA here shortly. There's massive changes, which are disturbing. And what does that course look like for us? And how can we do it starting with the easiest lawsuit, which would not maybe require a jury, but just a judge's decision. And we can set a precedent, you know, create some street cred, you know, go out there, get some more publicity, and then go for a bigger kill.
Yeah, that's great strategy. I mean, do we know for sure, like, is it easy to find out what is actually being sprayed? Like, I've heard people say, you know, it's a lot of, there's often aluminum, barium, that kind of stuff. But I, you know, I'm just going by what kind of anons are posting. I don't know for sure, but that doesn't mean there's not a bunch of, you know, smart scientists that are looking exactly what it is, or that maybe they have to disclose exactly what they're doing. I don't know. Do you know that at all?
Well, I mean, when there are weather modification programs out there, when they fill out their application to NOAA and the Department of Commerce, they are required to say, okay, this is what we're spraying. But then some of them may say, well, sorry, but this is, you know, patented special blah, blah, blah. Therefore, I can't tell you everything. So that kind of stuff does happen. But for the most part, what we have had happen is like this last year, we had so much snow, and I'm in the Sierras, right? And there's just tons of snow, heavy, heavy snow. And we had so much rain that we had mama warriors up and down the state and even other parts of the country where they were collecting the rain and the hail samples and snow samples. And they were sending it off to a really good lab. And they were doing this so that it would be basically certified and ready for a court if we needed to. Yeah. And ultimately, you know, we saw, you know, exactly what we have had tested. There's entities out there who have gone out there. It was very expensive. They got approval from the FAA to go behind one of those planes, was tracking those, you know, trails behind it and collect the immediate air samples. And of course, what they collected was aluminum and arsenic and barium and cadmium and cobalt and lead and copper and nickel and titanium and chromium-6, which Aaron Brockovich movie was all about. And so they found that very stuff behind the planes that we found in the snow and water and rain samples. So we know it's that, but this is the thing. So that stuff can and is being sprayed for a variety of reasons, but it's also shockingly in the jet fuel itself. So you have, And Jim Lee talks to us, and I don't remember the exact numbers, but it was like back in the 70s, we had like 70,000 commercial flights a day. And then in the 90s, we had like 95,000 commercial flights a day. Now today, at any given time, we have 100,000 flights going on at any given time, not just per day. And so you have now a huge magnitude of more commercial flights now than ever, but this is the doozy. And this is really important for those of us who are on the West Coast. Is now because we have exported all of our industries, most of our products now, of course, coming in from China and Asia. Well, now you have these gigantic cargo ships that are like floating cities who have these huge smokestacks who are also pushing out the aluminum, strontium, barium, and blah, blah, blah as well. Far, 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 far more and worse than what the commercial airlines are doing. And let me tell you, with the whole entire climate change scenario, they're going to say, yes, you can't fly anymore. Commercial flights are really, really bad. Look what they're doing. It's like, okay, great. But excuse me, you got these big cargo ships coming from China that are far worse than all of the flights combined. And if you really want to reduce those pollutants and heavy metals and soot and so on, then what we should really be doing is promoting buy local and and create local industries, right? And really do a cradle to grave calculation to see how much harm are they really doing to the planet. And that's not even part of the conversation. It's really about just clamping down on us. So we have all of these different type of heavy metals and things coming from all different directions. And it's not just these programs, and some of them are secretive programs, some of them are public programs, but just the economy itself, by going out there and ordering something on Amazon, by taking a flight to go on a vacation, every time you do that, you're spraying yourself and everyone else with heavy metals.
Yeah. You know, it's, I was wondering about, you know, we've talked about the current war, the spiritual war, 5G war, as General Flynn has talked about, you know, globalists against humanity. It's not even really controversial, I don't even think, to frame things that way, you know. And it's like, it's easy to see in something that was we the people versus the globalists spraying humanity with things and disguising it as something else is, you know, I mean, that's a technique of war from the air. But I was also going to ask you, you know, is it part of their, I don't know, like I thought maybe they were doing it to sort of gin up the data on climate change, because I don't know if they don't have a consensus on that as much as they like to push out that, you know, the science is in on climate change and you know, it's all, carbon and it's people are doing this. I don't know, you know, I had a well-known climate scientist on, and she basically said, look, our data says the planet is warming, you know, very, very minutely, but we don't know how much fossil fuels are really contributing to it. That's the consensus is still very much at play. It's all narrative and politics, which I thought was a really smart thing. But she had a funny Freudian slip when I asked her about geoengineering, and I cut this part out of the episode. I asked her about geoengineering, and she had a Freudian slip where she murmured into the mic, and the mic picked it up. She said, "Be very careful." And then she said, "Be very careful," in a really low tone to herself. And then she proceeded to deny that there was any such thing as weather. She goes, "Oh, well, there was cloud seeding back in the 60s, but you know, I don't ever see anything in the skies, nor do I see any evidence." And I was like, you know, I cut all this out because I didn't want to embarrass her, but I was like, are you serious? Like, you're down in Reno. Like, I know, I mean, you just got like, you know, 40 feet of snow or whatever. I go, you know,
60 feet of snow.
Yeah, 60. Yeah, yeah. I was like, have you never seen any of the videos? And she goes, no, I don't even know what you're talking about. I go, well, I'll send you some. I go, they're all over the place. But I didn't include that because I was kind of being pointed and kind of saying like, are you kidding me? This is the take you're going to, you know, so I let her off the hook. I didn't want to make it something that was weird or uncomfortable, but could this whole thing be part of like reinforcing this kind of climate change? Because I know they really want, you know, like the World Economic Forum, they really want to push this climate change into the consciousness of everybody so that we'll agree to, you know, electric cars for everybody. We won't, you know, let's stop traveling. Let's do 15-minute smart cities. We're all in this together. And you know, they're basically saying, trust us, we're the good guys, even though nobody trusts these guys. But anyways, I wanted to ask you, is it part of a larger climate narrative that they want to reinforce or maybe get data going that would support their case a little bit better?
Right. So, you know, I mean, to be very clear, 15 years ago, 15 years ago, more, I was starting organizations, you know, nonprofits around fighting climate change. We had Power Up and even Apple or Alliance for Post Petroleum Local Economy. We took on climate change and I believed in it. I was doing programs, even for Pacific Gas and Electric, changing out stupid, you know, conventional light bulbs with CFL light bulbs, which are horrific. Now I know this. So point is that I was an early adopter to climate change. What's happened is it's been very clear to me that no, the science is not decided. It is never, ever decided. Anybody who says that, you're going to lose my attention. Mm-hmm. And right now, the whole entire COVID lockdown was just a primer for the climate change lockdown. And I keep saying to people, look it, guys, you can't speak to me about climate change until you stop engineering and manipulating it. Mm-hmm. I'm not falling for climate change because it's very clear that we have been manipulating the weather for a long, long time, and we can weaponize it between HAARP and 5G even and the, you know, all the different antennas and the ionospheres, you know, and the satellites. And so, I mean, it's just like, holy cow, don't talk to me. And I can't help but notice that every single time we do talk about combating climate change, it's, as you said, oh, you all have to stop driving, you know, gas-powered cars, and you got to stop flying and eating, you know, protein.
Yeah, oh, stop eating meat. Yeah.
Because those pesky cow farts, and you're going to put you into a 15-minute city and blah. And I'm like, this is interesting because when you actually look at the data, If you are really concerned about climate change, the best thing you could do for not just to fight climate change, but just for overall healthy weather, nutritionally dense food, getting water back into the aquifers, cleaning up the streams and the waterways and blah, 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 is to rebuild your topsoil. But nobody ever talks about rebuilding the topsoil. It's like, we've got to lock you down, tax you, fine you, and contain you. But there's no proof that any of that does anything for the climate. But what we do know is rebuilding your topsoil as a fact does.
Right.
And I see people, until you start talking to me about things that are actually proven, rather than taking from us, taking us, fining us, you know, whatever, charging us, stealing our freedoms, yeah, have excuses to take away our food and our, you know, whatever. Don't talk to me about climate change.
Yeah, I love it. I love it, Renette. And so just give us an overview. We're going to be supporting Save Our Skies. We're going to talk it up. I love what you're doing. But what, just give us a little brief overview of what kind of work you're doing with Save Our Skies, what that's looking like, and how we can support you with it.
Right. Well, thank you. First of all, Save Our Skies, I started and it came out of my running for governor. We have what's called Gen 7, and it's all about the seventh generation principle, which is the whole foundation of me running for governor, which is every decision you make today should serve seven generations from now. And that comes from the great nation of the Iroquois Confederacy that inspired our forefathers to write the Constitution, believe it or not. Mm-hmm. And as a former elected official, I have always said, like, once I get elected, then what's my metrics? What's my measurement for leadership? And it should be like, when you make a decision, are you hurting or are you serving seven generations from now? It's a really good, you know, measurement for your decision making. So what happened was, we started Gen 7, is G-E-N-S-E-V-E-N, gen7.org. We are 501c3. And under that umbrella now is saveourskies.org, because I realized it doesn't matter if I'm out there to save the salmon or to save the legacy farms or to save the buffalo. If we're all being sprayed like dogs with chemicals and heavy metals, which we are, from commercial industries, from research organizations, from the government, you can't save anything if we're all being sprayed to death.
Yep.
So I realized, in order to serve the seventh generation, the most important thing I can do right now out the gate is stop and reduce the spraying. Mm. So what we've done, and we started this lawsuit, I went on to Give, Send, Go on, I think it was like April 19th, 18th or 19th, and I started Give, Send, Go. So if you go to givesendgo.com, you'll see Stop U.S. Geoengineering Legal Fund. You can also get through that through saveourskies.org as well, saveourskies.org. And what we've done is, we started raising some money so that we could go out there, build a legal team, which we have. It's a phenomenal legal team. And what I did is, I actually went out to get the people who were really looking through the constitutional lens. That, to me, is very important. So I got Dina Pollard-Sachs, who's a 25-year-long constitutional professor and attorney. She's phenomenal. And she's, you know, she's actually also essentially admitted into the Supreme Court, as well as her husband. So we have to, we're willing to take this to the Supreme Court. They're now out of Houston. And her husband, who's also a veteran trial lawyer, an appellate attorney, as known as the Hammer. And then we've got also their associates, Brad Bears and Tony Baca, who's from the Canadian team. He's in Canada. Mm. And he had a legal fight that basically he did not win. But the court said, look, come back, please appeal, come back. But this is out of our jurisdiction. We can't even stop this, even if the court tried to. So have the U.S. start and then come back. So he's doing that, too. So what we've done is, we've looked at, okay, who are the perpetrators, as I said, how can we go after them? But what's happened here in the United States is, there's this whole entire bill that just passed on the debt ceiling. And in the fine print was the evisceration of what's called NEPA, the National Environmental Protection Act. NEPA, which has been around since 1970, has, Tony, been the firewall of protection between developers and corporate interests, and, you know, making sure you have clean marshes and waterways and meadows and beaches. And in this compromise, this debt ceiling compromise, they basically eviscerated NEPA. And NEPA can be, so every time, like, for instance, there's a developer here in California, we have CEQA, which is C-E-Q-A, that's a California Environmental Quality Act. And then we have the national, which is NEPA. And you have to abide by their standards. But they've now eviscerated this. And essentially what they've done is, they're now going to allow the foxes to guard the hen house. Mm-hmm. So what we have to do now is we have hired another evidentiary environmental attorney who's an expert and professor, written books on this for law schools, Fred Gavs, G-A-L-V-S. Fred is actually going to be doing an analysis for us on what this new decision around NEPA means for us, right? Because now, the first time in 50 years, NEPA is something completely different. And we don't know how to navigate these waters. So I've raised a couple thousand dollars in the last few days, got to raise another $3,000 to pay for his brief and analysis. I'm like, okay, this is what you've got going for you, and this is what you don't. And then we're going to apply that to the perpetrators we have identified as, okay, these are the ones we're going after. We know it's going to be more than one lawsuit. It's going to be a series of lawsuits because there's a series of perpetrators, but each one creates a legal case, legal precedence. And that's how we're looking at this. So we're going for this lower hanging fruit to build our credibility and momentum and publicity while we're also building the case for the bigger perpetrators.
That's really smart. It's so strategic. I love it. We're going to support you in your fight because it's you know, one thing I love, Renette, about you is you're finding a way, like you're still an environmentalist, you know, and now they're trying to say, well, if you're not all down with climate change and these 10 bullet points, then you're not really an environmentalist. But you're saying, screw that. I know what environmentalism is. I know what's a healthy planet. I'm going to fight for that. I don't need to swallow your hook, line, and sinker bullet points, World Economic Forum. I know what's, you know, topsoil, local. I just love how you're still a stand, because I love the planet as well. And it partly is, this is just, you know, kind of a nightmare with what they're doing. But instead of being victimized, you're completely in action. It's just super inspiring. I wanted to ask you before we close up too, you mentioned, I point people, like if people are just starting to get oriented and like, what do you know, I want to find out more, what are people doing in terms of just researching it? I always point people to Peggy Hall, because I think she does a really good job on her channel of kind of presenting stuff. And then you had mentioned Jim something as one of your resources. What was his name again?
Right. So if you go to Climate Viewer, climateviewer.com, Jim Lee. Also, I have a Substack, Renette Senems, and that's R-E-I-N-E-T-T-E. And there's an S, so it's Renette Senems, or sorry, Renette, S-E-N-U-M-S, Renette Senems, foghornexpress.substack.com. So I've got stuff I put out there as well. We're going to continue, and I've interviewed Jim Lee on this. I'm going to be interviewing other experts we're bringing on to this lawsuit. I kind of go into different deep dives as well. But Peggy Hall's really great. It says Jim Lee's really good. You have zeroengineering.org as well. And that is Z-E-R-O. That's very good. And then also one of the consultants we're working with is Nikki Florio. She has Be Heroic, and that's B-E-E as in a bumblebee, beheroic.org. And that's also a really good one to go and check out stuff. She has lots of information on that as well. Oh, sorry, it's beheroic.com, beheroic.com. So yeah, and so again, Renette Senems, foghornexpress.substack.com is a good place to go. And all these folks, including Peggy Hall, I and Jim Lee and so on, I have interviewed. And I suggest going on there. And weathermodificationhistory.com is a great one to go to as well, because it has all the history. And you're going to be shocked. You're going to be shocked by the amount of information they've compiled there, as well as the history over 100 years.
Beautiful. Well, Renette, thank you so much for coming on Basecamp for Men and sharing your insight and your wisdom. It's so great to talk to another truther, another patriot, and just somebody who's got their values oriented towards humanity, and just really appreciate your time today.
Oh, thanks, Tony. I really appreciate it. And thank you, everyone. Again, go to saveourskies.org, please, and check it out. And we'll have updates there as well.
Beautiful. Well, I hope you enjoyed our time with Renette Senem as much as I did. Lots of resources to keep learning about this important topic that impacts us all, including future generations. Please support Renette and her team at SaveOurSkies.org. Not only are they taking on the biggest geoengineering perpetrators to court, but they are enlisting an army of concerned citizens to come at this from all directions. Basecamp for Men is a proud supporter of this cause. To learn more about this topic other than Save Our Skies, you can find valuable content on Peggy Hall's YouTube channel. She's great. And Renette mentioned a great resource in Jim Lee, who has done a ton of excellent work, and he is at www.climateviewer.com. Thank you, base campers, and we'll see you around the fire next week. If you find value in our show and wish to show us some love, we are now making that very easy to do. You simply go to www.basecampformen.com and click on Donate Support Basecamp. You'll find an easy way to make either monthly donations for as little as $5 a month, or you can donate just once. We love the monthly donation and hope to build this up over the coming months, but any show of support is greatly appreciated, honestly. Thank you for your support and for helping to keep Basecamp as a resource on your hero's journey. That's our show for today. Thank you for listening. Men, good luck in all your endeavors and good luck on your hero's journey. This is Tony Rezac, and you're listening to Basecamp for Men.